Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, in the same city, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. It was great walking around New Orleans with you. It is so nice to see your face, but I did kind of feel like there was a lot of people judging us. I don't know if they could tell that we were podcasters, if they knew we were definitely not NBA athletes and we were just kind of here as fringe hangers-on, but I got the vibe that we were being judged.
No, you know what? You were being judged because everyone looked at you and like, oh my God, Ben Golliver is like 6'5 in person.
That's a very charitable and nice thing for you to say. You know, you did come in with, what was your mantra that you told me?
Say yes to everything. That's my all-star.
Yeah, that was a very say yes to everything compliment right there. Like you're trying to butter me up for whatever the next party is going to be. I like it.
No, we had a great 40-minute walk through New Orleans. It's warm down here. Everything is great. And we are recording from different hotel rooms because of some hectic schedules tonight. But you know, we're here to bring the people the mailbag. That's what's important.
Look, we're going to get to the mailbag, but first you had a chance encounter with rap superstars, I believe.
Yes, I was actually just out trying to get some food and ran into the big timers who were just entering their show at the House of Blues. And I mean, that sentence right there is everything I could have wanted from New Orleans All-Star Weekend. So it's sort of all gravy from here.
How much combined jewelry were they wearing? I mean, is this like 200K, 300K? I mean, or are they sort of in the post-bankruptcy phase at this point?
No, there was a lot of jewelry. The big timers are doing fine. But what was most surprising to me was the amount of jewelry on the like hangers-on. Like everyone was iced out with cash money pieces. So, business is booming for the big timers. I'm happy for them.
They're a Navy, right? Didn't they say that at one point?
That's right. I'm also like, I'm really disappointed in myself for not being at that show, but the podcast takes precedent.
Yeah. Well, this is what I mean about people staring at us. They look at us and they think these guys are going back to their hotel rooms to record a podcast, not hang out at the rap show with the big timers. Do you have any other first impressions? I mean, you said you've been to New Orleans before and you were making fun of me for being a vegetarian and not being able to eat anything down here. I kind of like the city though. It's nice.
Yeah. I love New Orleans and it really does. For me, it underscores how psychotic Toronto All-Star Weekend was.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Because it was, it's just a very different experience. I'm walking around in a t-shirt down here and it's just fantastic. So
there's not 10 feet of snow and 5,000 people who think DeMar DeRozan deserves to start.
Right. Exactly. And I don't really have many original thoughts on New Orleans. I think like everyone in America seems to be in agreement that it's a great place and the food is wonderful. I do feel bad for you that you're going to miss out on so much delightful seafood and everything else. But
salads down here are fantastic. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And your first meal was at Jimmy John's. So we need to work on you.
Yeah. My first meal was a veggie sandwich at Jimmy John's. My second meal was at a seafood restaurant where I asked for blackened linguine with shrimp. Hold the shrimp. And the guy passed out. Like the waiter just fell over on the ground. And he was like, no, sir, we don't do that. And he just keeled over.
Yeah. Well, it's all part of the adventure for you this weekend.
I don't go in public often. So this is a big step for me. There's going to be a lot going on this weekend. This is kind of a nerdy question. Have you made picks? Like who you think is going to win the different events?
That is a good question. I guess we should start with broader all-star thoughts. I mean, I don't really think very hard about any of these events, but I
think very hard about all of them.
I know you
I wrote 3,200 words worth of previews for All-Star Weekend yesterday.
Yeah, that gives me a migraine just thinking that hard about this stuff. But so I think Derek Jones, that's the Sun guy, the Suns guy's name, right?
It is, yes. He's got a lot of buzz because he's got mixtapes where he's staring down into the rim, just casually, you know, hoverboarding in midair and looking down into the basket because he's so high off the ground. If you've got mixtapes of yourself doing that repeatedly, I think you deserve to be one of the favorites for the slam dunk competition.
Yeah, I feel like if you, like, he's not even really an NBA player. pretty much, right? I mean, I don't think he's played in more than one or two NBA games. So if you have that kind of background and are still allowed into the dunk contests, that means you can dunk. So I'm taking Derrick Jones.
Well, I was talking to somebody who's worked with him in the past, and they described him as a professional dunker who can
exactly
do things athletically that people who are actually professional dunkers, like there's the Team Flight Brothers and these other dunking crews that just like go around. They're like the Harlem Globetrotters of dunkers. Even they are like, this dude can do stuff that we have never seen. And actually, late Thursday night, I saw another professional dunker who's not in the dunk competition do sort of a Simone Biles floor routine before taking the basketball. No, listen to this. Before taking the basketball off the ground to do a through the legs dunk. So basically, he ran up as if he's, you know, listening to some like Tchaikovsky music in the background. Does like two front flips, grabs the ball, and then tries to go through the legs for a dunk. It was absurd. So these are the kinds of people who are being compared to Derrick Jones. And Derrick Jones isn't even the Las Vegas favorite to win the slam dunk contest. That's Aaron Gordon, who put on a ridiculously awesome show last year, even though he came in second to Zach LaVine. I guess the big takeaway here is there needs to be a lot more hype for this dunk competition. This could be a really good dunk contest.
Yeah, your color on Derrick Jones just got me way more excited for Derrick Jones. That'll be fantastic. And then Aaron Gordon...
Can I drop a few more knowledge bombs on you?
Yes, please do.
Okay, so Glenn Robinson III, he was described to me as, quote-unquote, the quiet type you have to worry about.
yes.
Which is just fantastic. And the thing is, like, he has every reason to be overlooked, right? Like, he's bounced around multiple teams, been in the league, you know, not very long, totally overlooked in the draft, you know, not nearly as good at basketball as his father, plays for a small-town team. Even in this field, you know, he's clearly fourth, I think, in terms of name recognition at this point in buzz, given that, you know, DeAndre Jordan's an all-star. Derrick Jones is like, you know, YouTube's favorite and a Vine all-star. And Aaron Gordon obviously has like been on that stage last year, right? So he's clearly fourth. But he was described to me as like, don't overlook the obvious guy to overlook. Like, he might have some real tricks in his bag. So I love it. Plus, DeAndre Jordan promised me he'd be in the dunk competition 2 years ago if he ever got selected to the All-Star game. Uh-huh. And they actually called him on it. They were like, no, dude, you made the All-Star game, so now we want you in the dunk contest. He's like, oh, that promise, right. So there's just angles and stories for this entire competition.
Yeah, I love Glenn Robinson III. I almost mentioned him as my pick. Out of blind loyalty to that Michigan team. That Michigan team with him, Trey Burke, and Nick Stauskas was one of my favorite college teams of all time. And I am blindly loyal forever to all three of those guys. And it honestly has not worked out very well for me with Trey Burke and Nick Stauskas. So all of my hopes are hinged on Little Dog. And I think Saturday night could be a big coming out party for him.
Oh, it could be. So who are you going to take? Are you taking Derrick Jones? Or who else do you see making the finals?
I'm sticking with Derrick Jones. And I am curious about your thoughts on... So who are you taking?
I'm going to go chalk, actually. I'm going to go Aaron Gordon over Derrick Jones. And there's one reason why. There's the showmanship factor that kind of gets built into these competitions. Mm-hmm. And I thought Aaron Gordon just handled the stage last year so well for being a young guy. I think he kind of owned his corniness in a little bit of spots in terms of like coming out with the goofy outfit and, you know, using the mascot, kind of appealing to the kids, having the hoverboard. Like, he's just clearly put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
And now he's sort of the poster boy for the competition. Like, he's front and center in all the ads. He's getting interviewed by Charles Barkley. I mean, to me, he sort of has a real incumbent's advantage.
So, yeah, to be clear, though, what you're saying is that the league is going to rig it for Aaron Gordon, right?
No, God, don't. You're always bringing the rig word into it. I don't think it needs to be like that. But he does have home court advantage. That's all I'll say.
Okay, good deal. All right, quickly, on three-point contest, who you got?
You know, this is a tough one. The big takeaway is, even though Steph's not in it, and people are going to focus on Steph not being in it, even though Steph's been in like 43 three-point contests, like, we get it. Every game's a three-point contest for Steph. all eight guys are in the top 22 for three-point attempts this year. Yeah, that's a stat that I just dropped on you. Also, they're all shooting better than 38.7% on those attempts. So you get this amazing field of high volume, high efficiency. And the best case scenario clearly is Nick Young winning. I think that will just blow everyone's mind. Not sure it's going to happen. Klay Thompson's a safe pick. Kyrie Irving is another pretty smart pick. I'm trying to decide if I want to just go for the chaos factor and kind of pull for Nick Young because I really can't stand his game that much on the court. And it would be pretty funny to watch him kind of run away with it.
Yeah, it would be close to a crowning achievement for Nick Young's career. Whereas like I feel like when you've won titles, it's not as important to Kyrie Irving and Klay Thompson. So I think we all should be pulling for Nick Young on Saturday night.
Hey, do you know what else I'm pulling for this weekend though?
What?
I want a Jokic like welcome to stardom like montage or moment, right? Like I think they put him in the skills challenge. He's in the Rising Stars challenge. I want Jokic to be like steal the scene. Maybe that's hoping too much. I don't know if he really has introduced his personality to a wide audience yet, but this dude is so good. And now that we don't have Embiid in anything because of his mysterious knee injury that got reported in a very indirect manner. I kind of am hoping that Jokic kind of steps into those very large shoes and kind of surprises people.
I can't wait to watch him in the skills competition, in part because, I mean, when you watch it, like, Jokic is pretty slow, and speed is important in that competition. So he could, like, put together one of the slower skills competition performances we've ever seen. And you know what? That's great too. So I really it's a win-win with Jokic on Saturday night.
But you remember those old Pro Bowl competitions they put on TV where like the quarterbacks were like throwing footballs through the little rings like 30 yards away?
Yeah.
Like Jokic could probably put a behind the head pass into a ring from 30 yards. So like there's going to be certain parts of the skills competition where he really comes through.
Yeah. No, I hope. And I do think his personality is like he is low key very funny if you read some of the quotes coming out of Denver. So I don't know if it'll be this weekend, but at some point, Jokic will continue to rise.
Yeah, I mean, our other hopes are guys like Porzingis. And I mean, they're actually putting Jahlil Okafor on the media tour this year. It's like, boy, that's, you know, straight from one interview to the trade block.
Someone please trade for me.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty sad. So I'm not sure the Friday lineup is the greatest. But maybe some of the bigs will have a good showing, or maybe some of these young guards will kind of break out and surprise us. But, you know, how excited are you going to get about a Malcolm Brogdon breakout in the Rising Stars?
I don't know how anyone in America can watch the Rising Stars game. I mean, like the All-Star game itself is pretty sloppy, but the Rising Stars like takes it to a new level, and then again you're watching guys like Malcolm Brogdon, so like I don't get the appeal.
Are you going to take the world team? Let's make some predictions. Yeah. Are you taking the world team or the USA team?
I think we need to jump into actual mailbag questions.
All right, fine.
All right, let's jump in here from George Frazier. Now that Mexico is hip to the Blazers, Nuggets, Wiz, and Raps, what about the big question? Who is Kerr going to put on Dubs Island in the All-Star game? Boogie or DeAndre for fun or Russ for torture? And if Russ played, would he even consider passing the ball? Maybe the Dubs could let him play 1-on-5 by hanging around half court.
So that wasn't just a random Mexico reference from George. He's our listener from Mexico.
Yes.
So let's just clear that up. Probably an important thing. I love this question. I actually was contemplating whether the over-under for Westbrook to Durant passes in the All-Star game should be set at 0.5.
Oh my God. Is that an actual bet?
I just made it. I mean, feel free. You can take either side. I think that's where the line needs to be set. I mean, at most, he does one accidentally. He's not going to be passing this guy multiple times unless he goes like crazy reverse troll and just force feeds KD, yeah, which would be incredible.
In like a really creepy way.
That would be amazing. I think, honestly, I think it could be DeAndre to go with the four Warriors players simultaneously. I mean, like positionally, that fits because they've got the two guards, they've got the two forwards. And I think like, I've heard a surprising number of Warriors fans on the, like, let's try to, like, recruit DeAndre after the Clippers fall apart. He's the perfect center to, like, anchor the greatest 77 win of all time team.
Yeah.
Like, there's some real DeAndre, I don't know if you want to call it, like, lust or envy. I mean, just kind of pick one of the sins. The Warriors fans, there's a lot of them who have this, like, DeAndre circled. And there's been some Boogie talk too, but, you know, personality-wise, like, who fits better? Plus, KD and DeAndre are, like, best friends. I kind of think that'd be a good look for DeAndre, right? Running around with a team that's not Chris Paul and Blake for once.
Yeah, I think that's a smart prediction. I was going to say Boogie to recruit him. But I do think that, like, if we're being real about this, DeAndre is probably the most likely candidate. Because, little known fact, DeAndre Jordan is the most popular player in the NBA. And I don't think I've ever heard someone bring up DeAndre Jordan and not say, like, yeah, we're boys. Like, we hang out all the time in the offseason. Like, that is just sort of like the go-to NBA hang for everyone. So I think Kerr will lean into that and pick DeAndre. There'll be a lot of alley-oops.
I mean, another wrinkle that we need to really seriously consider is, like, does Kerr just bury Westbrook? You know,
no.
Like, does he just go cupcake revenge mode and say, look, the fans voted in Curry, the fans voted in Harden. Those were my top priorities, because I'm coming from the perspective of I've heard guys really complain and whine about their minutes in the All-Star game before afterwards. I'm not going to name any names, LaMarcus Aldridge, but could Westbrook find himself kind of frozen out by the Warriors coaching staff?
No, I think Kerr has been in, like, crisis management mode for the last 3 or 4 months with the Warriors. Like, any hint of controversy, and Kerr is trying to shut it down, and he's just been very careful, and he's not going for 70 wins again, and he's just sort of playing it conservative. So I think that his goal going into Sunday night's game is going to be to come out for the Sunday night press conference and not have to answer questions about, like, some bullshit Westbrook controversy.
That's a great point, because he's going to have to answer those questions, like, you know, for, like, preemptively for the next 2 days.
Yeah, straight. And he also, like, he's been trailed by this pack of media for, like, the last 4 months. So I think he's trying to keep it as low key as possible.
Not to drop another knowledge bomb on you, but Westbrook could also become the first player to win 3 straight MVP All-Star Game awards. So Kerr, you know, he really has to weigh the history here. You know, he can't bury Westbrook without, you know, potentially compromising a really impressive streak.
Totally. Give him a shot. All right. Next question from JDM. Isn't the NBA way more fun with shitty GMs? Hennigan should have been fired last year, but I kind of want him extended. What do you think?
I think writing about the NBA is a lot more fun with crappy GMs. I mean, like, and what's really funny too is that the internet loves to talk about crappy GMs. Like, remember when I went off on the Suns a week or two ago? I think I got like 7 requests from Suns podcasts. I think people started Suns podcasts just so that they could talk about how bad the GM's been. And obviously the same thing goes with Orlando. And boy, did people really let Hennigan have it after that Serge Ibaka trade, right?
Yeah, and I mean, part of me, I think they should have been letting Hennigan have it like 2 years ago. So this is sort of pent up resentment for among,
like,
Magic
what
fans.
Does it take to fire this guy?
Yeah, and I don't know what else they could have done. They shouldn't have traded for Serge Ibaka in the first place. So maybe that, like, in that respect, all of that was fair. But he had sort of painted himself into a corner. What I will say about the crappy GMs, though, is that one of the things that I enjoy is that for a few years it looked like the only GMs who were getting hired were, like, young analytics guys like Hennigan and like Ryan McDonough in Phoenix, who, not to say like analytics or whatever, but they were fluent in the way basketball is sort of processed now. And
they're not like 1975 All-Star centers.
Basically, they're not Ernie Grunfeld, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so it looked like everybody was going to be really shrewd about maximizing value, and just sort of it seem like we were not going to have any crappy GMs. And it turns out that there's still like a solid group of people who have no idea what they're doing. And I think part of that is that owners are still crazy. So you get weird pressures to win and guys who are on the hot seat all of a sudden. Like Hennigan, I think a lot of the reason he's made so many bad moves is because he's been like sort of managing for his job for a little while here. So I enjoy the fact that there's still, no matter how smart people get, people are still going to be stupid.
For sure. And like, we've also talked about the whole asset accumulation, like, oh, I got a 2021 second rounder. And it's like, well, cool, that sounds great when the cap is kind of steady for five straight years and everybody's playing on the same terms. But then you just add Kevin Durant in your back pocket and, you know, LeBron James snaps his fingers and he's surrounded by Kevin Love. And it's like, oh, cool, 2021 second rounder. Great luck with that. Yeah,
it's tough.
And I do think some of the GMs that we criticize the most are the guys who are playing by that playbook that was the smart way to do it a few years ago. And maybe the rules have changed a little bit. Hey, I have a theory real quick on Hennigan.
Yeah.
Have you ever worked in an office environment where somebody wanted to kind of get fired, but they didn't want to quit, but they kind of just like deep down, they knew they wanted to get fired?
No, that's like the George Costanza episode of Seinfeld with the Yankees. But yes, I know what you're talking about.
Because first of all, he gives that interview to the Orlando Sentinel where he just trashes his roster. Right. And like the only logical conclusion anyone would draw from reading that interview was that this guy hates himself and the job that he's done. Right.
Yeah.
So then he gets what should have been a kiss of death, where they're basically like coming out and kind of saying, yeah, man, like, you know, you're going to be with us for the whole season. We only do these kinds of decisions at the end of the year. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So then he doubles down. Basically sells Serge Ibaka for roughly 50 cents on the dollar while also giving more interviews where he like very coyly says like, look, like I understand the hot seat talk. I get it. I totally get the hot seat talk. Like, isn't this guy basically begging to be fired and put out of his misery?
It's a good theory. I didn't read the interview that you mentioned there. So I can't totally comment, but I'm willing to trust you. I like when you get conspiratorial.
Oh, I've got plenty more. In New Orleans.
Wait a second. Let's bring them all out. While we're here, can you share your LeBron theory?
Okay. This could be like LeBron playing chess versus checkers. We've been completely bamboozled about his minutes this year, right? Like, it makes no sense. I think you suggested that he basically enter the witness protection program for 2 months. Like, it just doesn't make sense how many minutes he's playing. Now Kevin Love goes down, like, as if you need like a cautionary tale of what happens when a star player is playing too many minutes for a team that doesn't need to be going all out during the regular season. Here's Kevin Love. I can basically see two explanations for LeBron taking these minutes, because you've made the point, and I actually am coming around to agree with you, that this is not just like incompetence from Ty Lue. This is like a LeBron-driven initiative, which he's usually so smart about things. It's kind of confusing to me why he would like willingly volunteer for these minutes. I see two possible explanations. One, he wants to win the MVP. That's reasonable. I mean, he is the best all-around player in the NBA. He hasn't won it in a long time. You're going to need like a big win total, and you're going to need a story. And his story is, you know, he's taking the workload after being a champion and he's working hard. That's a pretty good story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus he'd have huge stats.
Well, and also that now that Love is out, he really does have a good shot at it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he always has a shot at it. You know, he should never be lower than third or fourth,
like
on even a weak year where he's not playing that many minutes. So the other possible theory, though, is that this is like one giant hedge, right? If I'm him, I'm looking at the Warriors and like, I mean, their season has gone so much more smoothly than the Cavaliers season. No injury issues to work around, the continuity factor. You know, the Eastern Conference is starting to tool up a little bit. His road to the finals is going to be more difficult. The one big benefit of playing all these minutes is that at the end of the season, he can be like, look, I gave it everything I had. I went above and beyond. I took on every minute role. This wasn't a situation where LeBron lost. This was a situation where LeBron's supporting cast lost, and that the Warriors were just the super team that were deeper and better rested. And that's a pretty compelling narrative that also happens to be true. And it's going to be unavoidable, right? Like, if he leads the league in minutes played, he finishes top three in the MVP voting, and they get worked by the Warriors in the finals. Like, isn't that the conclusion everyone's going to draw?
Totally.
And that's good for LeBron's legacy, right? Because the worst case scenario is everybody starts talking about his finals record again, and everybody starts saying, oh, he's only 1-2 against Steph in the finals. And this is like a way to just kind of soften the edges of the worst case scenario for him. Do you think he thinks this deeply, or are we just reading way too much into it?
I love it. It's so, so cynical to put this forward seriously. But I think first and foremost, LeBron does want to win MVP. But I do like the idea that LeBron doesn't actually want to lose to the Warriors, and he will have a built-in excuse here, and he's going to kind of be like the person in the job interview who's like, my only weakness is that sometimes I just work too hard, you know? And like, that could be LeBron come June. But mostly I'm just excited that this theory exists and that you were willing to put it out there. And yeah, I do think first and foremost, MVP is what he's about this year. And maybe okay. He should win it like as sort of like a trophy, a second trophy after last year's finals. I don't know.
Here's another part of this theory. I'm not necessarily saying he's doing it consciously. This could be like an unconscious,
this is
like
his subconscious reaction.
Yeah, it's like, you know, his like psychological like defense mechanism, right? Because nobody wants to be judged harshly when you're clearly the best player on earth, right? And it's got to be endlessly frustrating for him that for people to focus on his poor finals record, to bring it up with the Jordan comparisons and so on and so forth. His best defense against that is this proactive maniac regular season where he really proves that like he can carry anybody, because that was the whole story in 2015, right? I wrote that story many times during that playoff run about how ridiculous his usage rate was, his insane combined points, rebounds, and assists, and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's all true. And I think sometimes he thinks that the media forgets about that.
Right.
And rest assured, I have not forgotten, and I'm actually anticipating this now.
This is LeBron's subconscious crying out for help. This is just something for people to track as the year unfolds, you know? next question, sticking with the MVP here. JDC asks, thoughts on Kawhi as legit MVP? Second best record, 26 points per game, 28 PER, near 90-50-40, plays defense. Look, I mentioned this to you earlier in the day. I really think Kawhi should win MVP, given how good the Spurs have been and how good he's been.
I am so glad you brought this question up and you brought that conversation up, because I've been sitting on and I told you so for a solid 6 hours right now.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you were trying to give me crap for saying that I would start my future franchise with Kawhi Leonard on this very podcast? And I was like, yeah. It must really be tough to have like one of the best two-way players who's super young, can score, can lock anybody down, always win 60 games, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And you're like, oh, yeah,
that.
What a terrible pick. Well, guess what? He's an MVP candidate again. And yeah, he's got a strong case, just like all these guys do, to finish in the top three or to even win it. I'm not ready to go there for him, number one, but his case is steady, and easily gets the least love of the top five candidates or the top six guys. He's getting the least love. He's kind of in that Chris Paul category from a few years ago, where like you could make a strong case that he should be the MVP based on his individual play, his team's steady success, and it just never quite comes together. I think he's going to get tripped up on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, you should start your franchise with him. I don't understand why you're giving me so much crap about that.
Can I make my case against Kawhi as a franchise starter? If you're starting a franchise, it's bigger than just basketball. Like you're dealing with off the court. So you want a personality. You want someone who's going to engage with the community. You want someone who's going to be a national figure, who's going to get you on national TV. I mean, if you've got Steph Curry's an international celebrity. Guess who's the worst celebrity in the NBA? Kawhi Leonard.
Well,
and
he's got amazing guest appearances in the HEB supermarket commercials that air locally in San Antonio.
Kawhi works great in one market And everywhere else, it would be kind of uncomfortable to have him as the face of the franchise.
I know I was in a Jordan pop-up shop with you here in New Orleans today, and we saw some Kawhi posters, didn't we?
I guess so, yeah. I did see his name on there, and I was like, oh, that's right. Kawhi Leonard is part of Jordan Brand, which
all right. This is more of a sharp. This is more of a sharp problem than a global basketball phenomenon. Didn't you read that great story by Tom Haverstraw today that said there was a guy in Macedonia who tried to hack the NBA's All-Star voting system to vote for Kawhi Leonard 300,000 times with the help of bots? I mean, that's how big Kawhi is.
I didn't read that story, but I can't wait to check it out because I feel like the particulars of the online voting would be kind of like a fascinating and like a little bit scary window into how we work online.
I think Baxter Holmes was also involved with that one too. Now there was some really crazy twists and turns, but by far the weirdest part was that there was this just random guy in Macedonia trying to rig the whole thing for Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
The NBA was onto it, but again, this is why you should build your franchise. If you don't want the Macedonian hackers, really who do you want?
It's like an NBA Black Mirror episode. Yeah, so anyways, JDC, last I checked, Kawhi is 15-1. I'm pro Kawhi, and I think that there is a chance that we get... If LeBron rests, there's a chance that we get to the end of the season, and the Spurs are doing really, really well, obviously. And then I think if the Rockets continue to come back to earth, they're 9-9 over their last 18 games... The door is going to be open and it's going to be hard to argue against Kawhi. That's all I'll say. And at 15-1, that's a solid bet right now. So
yeah, it would be worth betting on because you can always make the argument the Warriors are going to cancel each other out.
Exactly.
The Thunder won't win enough games. The Rockets might fall off just enough, and then you can have the two-way argument for Kawhi as scorer plus defender versus the more of a one-way argument with Harden.
And also the Spurs are winning at a pretty outrageous pace. Considering,
I mean, they should have the second best record in the NBA by the time it's all done.
Well, yeah, they do. They have the second best record now, but that roster is not quite as good as people think. You know, like outside of Kawhi, like LaMarcus has kind of been up and down, and the rest of the team is sort of like held together with scotch tape. But Kawhi has just been that good.
Well, that's why you start a franchise with them. All right,
next
question.
And also, I should also say we should move on quickly because Kawhi is super boring. I worry about that. Zach Powers asks, if this year's Knicks are the Knicks from Eddie, is Carmelo more like the Stacey Patton or the Nate Wilson? Have you seen Eddie?
No, I don't know how I missed that sports movie classic.
Can I just say that for me personally, I wish every question were like this. If you have questions of relating the current NBA to crappy mid-90s sports movies, I'm all in. And I really feel like Carmelo is more the Nate Wilson on this Knicks team. I think people probably look to him as kind of the leader, the wise veteran. And Nate Wilson, I believe, was played by John Sally, because there was also Rick Fox, who was also kind of a wise veteran. Stacey Patton, I think, was Malik Sealy, RIP. And Carmelo has definitely had a lot of Stacey Patton moments over the years, but I think he's kind of phased that out of his persona on the Knicks, certainly. But Carmelo definitely was more of a Stacey Patton, like on the Nuggets in the Furious George era.
Well, if any of the listeners out there have questions about, like, you know, the socioeconomic or racial realities of a movie like Hoop Dreams, like, feel free to send those in too. When I was like 12 years old, I actually went and had my birthday party at Hoop Dreams. That's like a 4-hour long movie.
It's also a pretty dark movie for a birthday party.
It's an incredibly dark movie. Needless to say, my dad had to go back and forth to the concession stand like 6 times to appease all these little kids who just did not care about Arthur Agee's, you know, struggle through the Chicago public school system.
Yeah.
But yeah, if we get any questions like that, like, feel free. Otherwise, if it's just going to be Eddie stuff, I'm out.
All right, fair enough. Shout out to Sean for that question. All right.
No, shout out to Zach Powers for that question. Sean has the next one. He says,
"Oh,
isn't it time you guys get back to talking about America's team?
Yes, that's right.
What do the Sixers need to do to make a 10-game run for the eighth seed? More from Super Dario?
What do you think, man? I know you love Sixers talk.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that cooled. I'm also glad the Heat kind of cooled a little bit, too, because I was getting a little sick of the, like, let's talk ourselves into these crappy Eastern Conference teams as, like, real stories. Hooray. Like, I hate that. Like,
hold on,
just
hold on,
drives
hold
me
on.
Nuts.
The Heat are fun. And if you're rooting for the Heat to steal the eighth seed with Dion Waiters and Goran... Oh, here we go. Goran Dragic.
Oh, God, here we go.
So if you're not rooting for that, I don't know what to say. Because Whiteside, Waiters, Dragic, and Luke Babbitt is a starter for them. Like, it would be more fun for me to see them in the playoffs than any of the other crappy, like, allegedly good eighth or seventh seeds.
All right, say it five times fast. Dragic, Saric. Dragic, Saric.
Dragic, Saric. Yeah, that's right. Okay. I feel good. I've gotten it right three times on this podcast.
Yeah, pretty close.
So Sixers,
In terms of Philly, well, the first thing they've got to do, as we know and everybody knows, they got to get Embiid back on the court. And I've kind of told you sort of off mic, and I've occasionally hinted at the Oden comparisons, you know, on mic as well.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you one thing that was like very, very prominent during Greg Oden's time in Portland was the very sketchy delivery of medical information and updates. Like, they would just kind of randomly come out of nowhere like 6 months later that, like, oh, he had this quote unquote setback, or like, oh, this thing happened. And also the backlash to any public appearance where he looks like he's having fun, such as Joel Embiid, you know, dancing at the Meek Mill show. That was another thing that very, you know, this is like
straight out of the Blazers playbook.
I mean, completely out of the Blazers playbook. So, I mean, everybody wants to bash Colangelo for all sorts of things in terms of the roster. Why hasn't he traded Okafor? What happened with the Nerlens Noel situation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He needs to really get serious about the PR around Embiid. Like, this is an unacceptable situation where they're not delivering news about a meniscus tear that sidelined him for weeks.
Well, not only that, though.
Give me a break. That is clown show behavior. I mean, that's as bad as the NBA changing the name of the D League to the G League because Gatorade paid them for it. Like, that is just bottom of the barrel, like below standard behavior. You have to do better than that. And he knows that. He's been around. He's won multiple Executive of the Year awards. He's not some clueless rookie.
Yeah.
He's doing it because he thinks there's a competitive advantage and he doesn't want to take the PR hit. You got to be honest. Well, the cover-up is always worse than the crime, especially on meniscus tears.
Okay, a couple things. First of all, I agree with you on the Okafor stuff being kind of overblown. I don't understand why everyone cares so much. Clearly the Sixers are trying to move them or trying to move him, and clearly a deal will get done eventually. It's not a huge deal if he has to just wait an extra week or two, or they're trying a couple different things. Like, it's turned into this like national embarrassing saga, and I think everyone needs to relax. As for the Embiid stuff, the thing, did you realize that they played him with that injury?
How much did he play? Was it just later in that game, or did he come back and play another game?
I think he came back. I think he initially hurt it in a Blazers game and then came back and played on a Friday night game on ESPN against the Rockets, which,
yeah,
you
that's
know,
a bad look.
That's a really bad look. And I think that's probably why Colangelo didn't want to say anything. And, you know, it's tough. Like, I understand that they were on national TV and they were probably, I mean, because they were also flexed into that game and it would have been a bad look to not play him. But, like, this is kind of like the
there's
next.
There's no excuse. The whole thing is about the big picture with him. I mean, you have a minutes limit the whole way along. He's not playing on back-to-backs. I mean, the whole thing is you're trying to pretend that you've got him in bubble wrap. And if that's really how it played out,
yeah, I don't want to
just like threw the bubble wrap away for one game. That's awful. I don't know that that's exactly what happened. Maybe it is.
Right. It may not be, but it seems like they've been pretty vigilant about checking out Embiid's health. So it's strange to me that they wouldn't know. It would be a bad look for them not to know. And like, even if they didn't know, they should have known going into that Rockets game. But it, either way, like, I don't want to be too dramatic about it because it's just a meniscus thing and it's likely minor from what we've heard. But that is kind of an unforgivable move.
Well, let me get serious for a second about why transparency here matters, right? Everyone wants to say, oh, you should protect him from the bad headline. He just has to deal with being called injury prone. You know, if it's just a minor thing, like, what's the harm in, like, you know, just trying to pretend he's out for a couple weeks and have him come back when he's ready. The issue is that it builds in for the athlete this sort of disconnect between what he's going through and what everybody else is experiencing, right? So that these other incidents, when he's dancing on stage or whatever else might be, start to go through warped perception and warped lenses, right? And so now he starts to distrust the media. He's being coached, you know, not him specifically, but a player in that situation. And this is something I saw with Oden, where he's shielded from the media. He's not allowed to say what's on his mind. He's not allowed to give accurate updates about how he's feeling. It just kind of creates this level of paranoia that's just not healthy. You're way better off just owning it. You know, if there's a setback, get it out there. That way he can be honest about it. He doesn't need to go and do 60 minutes and talk about his knee swelling for 60 minutes,
yeah.
You know, but at least he can not have to hide and, you know, play these games about what's going on behind the scenes and just create this just endless vacuum of speculation.
Yeah. Just in general, like, one comment on the Colangelo era thus far, it's crazy how much time he spends operating, like, from a position of weakness. Like, you mentioned that he's won executive of the year, like, however much that means. Like, he's been in this business for a really long time. I don't understand why he spends so much time kind of worried about public perception. Like, he's got the job, he's got all kinds of picks and secure, and like the foundation has been laid for him. He needs to kind of man up a little bit on a couple different fronts.
For sure. I think the trade deadline could potentially change that narrative.
Yeah.
You know, if he can move Okafor and just finally it's done.
And even it doesn't if he's matter what he gets. Like, I the reason it's taken so long to trade Okafor is because he's worried about people scrutinizing the return. And it's like, of all the Sixers fans I know, they would take literally anything for that dude. So it doesn't really matter. So anyways, I don't know. The other thing with the Sixers is the Simmons news today, which came out that his foot is not fully healed. And that's another one where I'm like, there's no reason for this to be dramatic. The Sixers should just come out and say he's not playing this season.
Exactly. And it's another one where you have all these like competing stories, right? Like, they were pretending to be super above and beyond in their disclosure of information about him at the start. And now the story changes. And what do you know? It's more bad news. And come on.
Yeah.
Like, this is Mickey Mouse stuff for a team that should be better than it. And this is like what they were really kind of pitching themselves as too, right? Like, this established, longstanding, you know, basketball dynasty of executives. And, you know, they're just creating all these needlessly negative things. And look, no one's ever going to be happy with guys like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are missing time for injuries. That's just guaranteed you're going to have an angry reaction from the fan base because everybody wants to see their stars. You just got to be honest and straightforward about it.
You know what the weirdest part about all this is? Is on the court, the Sixers are still really fun. Like, I watched most of the second half of the Celtics-Sixers game the other night, and that team, like, Dario, Super Dario, shout out to Sean, has legitimately turned a corner and is playing really well right now. TJ McConnell is the most inexplicable good player in the league for me. And they just, like, those guys play hard. Nerlens, you know where I stand on Nerlens, and has filled in really nicely for Embiid. So, like, it's got to be bizarre for actual Sixers fans because, like, the team still has the outlines of, like, a lot of, like, there's still a lot of progress this year. And Colangelo just needs to stop screwing it up.
For sure. Hey, I got another question for you from Ansi. He wants to know, who's the most boring player in the NBA? And then he adds, or she adds, why is it Mike Dunleavy?
What do you think?
I was going to nominate Brooke Lopez.
Ooh, That's a good one.
Part of the reason why is he's been through so much losing and so much turnover and just crazy stuff in Brooklyn. And I think even dating back to New Jersey, has he like ever made a peep about unhappiness? Like on one polar end of the spectrum, you've got Cousins just ready to lose his mind, quick trigger temper every night in Sacramento. Brook Lopez, okay, he's made the playoffs a few times, right? But he has clearly stared down a situation over these next couple of years, which is definitely worse than Sacramento mm-hmm. in terms of like ability to win. He's in his prime. He has zero help. He's had to go through multiple coaching changes. Some of the hires were just indefensible. Like Lionel Hollins, like, give me a break. I'm sure he's a Stanford guy and smart enough to realize that, you know, the Gerald Wallace trade probably wasn't the move. you just go right down the list, right?
Yeah.
This guy never complains. How is that possible? He's got to be the most boring guy. Plus, his brother is out there beating up mascots and doing all that ridiculous stuff, kind of getting the attentions for the crazy hair. And Brooke just kind of keeps it tight in the barbershop, keeps everything in-house, under the lid in terms of his personality. And I think he's my pretty clear choice.
Can I ask you something? Do you like the Robin Lopez mascot act?
No.
All right, good. Because anytime I see one of those videos, I kind of like will play along for a second, and then I'm just like, this isn't that funny. I don't understand why this is a thing. But yeah, Brook Lopez is a really solid choice for the boring award. Dunleavy is also a great choice. If I had to choose one, I would probably say Tobias Harris.
Ooh.
Because
shots fired, kind of.
I guess shots fired at you. Like
what?
Well, don't you like Tobias Harris?
Yeah, he's fine. I don't love him as a player, but I think
boring.
He's solid. I mean,
yeah,
he hasn't had a
fine.
Great season.
Yeah, he like I he's just as random. Like he's not a bad player. He's not a stranded player. He's allegedly good, allegedly helpful, but like. I don't know. I will never have a passionate feeling about Tobias Harris.
That's fair. That was a pretty good answer. I'm glad we gave some semi-interesting answers to a question that was like built around boredom. Yeah. I think we should wrap this up with one more question because it's getting pretty late here.
Pretty
We've got a long weekend. This is a good one, though, from our old friend Book Warmington. He wants to know, what big trade rumor over the last 10 years do you wish had happened?
Do you have an answer?
Well, this question made me realize how many media sessions at All-Star Weekend I've been to that have been kind of conducted around Carmelo Anthony rumors. Like dating all the way back to Denver, he's either been in a trade rumor or a free agency rumor or an unhappiness rumor or like, why is the team falling apart? There's just like always drama. And so I don't know if you had the same reaction I did when Adam Silver kind of named Carmelo Anthony as the replacement for Kevin Love. I think I audibly groaned for like 45 seconds straight, like just because now you know what everyone's going to talk about. We have to go through these media sessions for the next 2 days. How many questions are we getting about Carmelo Anthony for Kevin Love trades? How many times is that going to be a thing?
I just love your fake groan. That was amazing. Yeah, I kind of like that Carmelo was named though.
No, you're just trying to get me to groan again. Stop.
It's an all-star game. This is
oh
for fans. Carmelo is the most famous non-all-star.
The fans hate him. He's getting booed out of Madison Square Garden even when he does good things.
It feels like more of an event with him in the mix. And I say this as someone who loves Bradley Beal, and I feel like Beal actually wound up benefiting from this because he kind of became like a grassroots favorite among like hardcore basketball heads. But he's not
going to twist his ankle on
Sunday. And he gets to go to St. Louis and chill for the weekend. He'll be fine. It doesn't bother me that much with Carmelo. If I had to think of one trade, though, I always go back to the CP3 trade, which was not a trade rumor. That's not it doesn't totally answer this question, but like I will forever wonder what it would have been like with CP3 and Kobe in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, selfishly, the one that I would love to be able to just snap my fingers and make it happen, Paul George for the Lakers. I mean, that would just sort of be like a life-changing trade, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, this team like can actually matter. They don't have to go and rehire Magic Johnson for the 14th time because Jim Buss is like so hopeless. And now we all have to write articles about whose team is the Lakers, who's really running the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it would have been nice for any of the like stars to the Lakers trades to actually work out.
Well,
you know what actually trade rumor that I would love to have worked out is the Dwight Howard to the Lakers. Like, I wish that had actually worked. You know, like that backfired as bad as it possibly could have, but there was like real ceiling to that possibility, and clearly personalities got in the way, but well, that would have been a good one.
I also wonder how it would have worked if Dwight had been on the Lakers with CP3. And one of the reasons I wonder about the CP3 situation so often is because like it might not have worked because Kobe needed the ball a lot. Chris Paul needs the ball a lot. Both of them are like homicidal competitors, and it could have just been a disaster. And in the, a lot of the same ways that the Dwight Lakers were, except that like I feel like the Dwight Lakers didn't work because Dwight and Kobe had such different personalities, and Kobe and Chris Paul have like disturbingly similar personalities, and it could have just been a really toxic workplace, and I it would have been fun.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because Kobe rumors were other ones. Like, remember there was like very brief, like Kobe might do the Clippers. Like that was like a little bit longer ago, but then there every once in a while, I'll be like, Kobe will go join Phil Jackson in New York. Like, would Kobe ever go to the Bulls and like follow like just bogus Kobe trade rumors that like never really came to fruition?
Yeah.
But imagine how much that would have changed his legacy, because such a huge part, especially locally, among the Lakers fan base, of the perception of Kobe, the glorification of Kobe, was built around 20 years, one franchise, Laker for life.
Totally. That's really true.
You know what I mean? And so like, where does he like become ranked in the all-time greats, or how is he thought of if instead of kind of like winding down in his final years in Los Angeles, where everybody was willing to give him a pass for everything and blame everybody else, whether it's Byron Scott, Dwight, Steve Nash's injury, like the list goes on, right? What if he went to another situation where there was real accountability and responsibility for like his shot jacking and his age-related decline and all that stuff? I mean, it would be a completely different story in terms of how people remember him, even though he would still be, you know, the number three scorer of all time, Hall of Famer, and so forth. So
it's really, really true, because it really, like, by staying and then winning those last two titles, he sort of transformed himself into a religious figure in Southern California. And if you remove that, there are a lot of warts that people would have picked at. And I think you're right. His legacy definitely suffers, even if he had won another title somewhere else.
Well, on that note, after angering all the Kobe fans, hey, by the way, here's another all-star trivia question for you. First time Kobe Bryant was not selected to an all-star game since 1999, this game.
Wow.
So well, that's a long run to have ended here. No Dwayne Wade. There was no Carmelo Anthony until he got in the back door. No Chris Paul. No Blake Griffin.
I completely forgot that Kobe was in the was in the All-Star game last year. So that tells you
the whole thing was a tribute to him.
Tells you how important the All-Star game is. But thank you for listening. Sorry we're keeping it a little shorter tonight, but I have to get to bed. We will be back early next week with a trade deadline preview and some All-Star recap stuff from New Orleans. But Ben, I will see you tomorrow, media day.
All right, can't wait, man. Take care.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.